Thomas is fixed.
Well, you need to finish. Should we finish yours?
I didn't. We just decided not to.
Oh,
I didn't think we decided that.
No, I think we just thought we'd
speed up. We'd try and speed up a little bit.
I think we should try and finish one.
Otherwise, if we change focus completely,
All right. Kind of conclusion.
Maybe if we can. As far as we can get for the moment.
Should we just silently read each paragraph and then just comment on it jointly?
If you would,
well, perhaps if Tyner just reads through it at a quicker pace through the last bit, or is that not appropriate?
That's fine.
Me reading my text?
Yeah. Do you want to do that?
Why not? Poetry corpus.
Oh no, let's have someone else reading, because it's nice to hear somebody else reading your text.
Acoustic players, on the other hand, produce the sounds through a delicate interplay between touching and listening. The ray of the resonance is felt as much as it is heard. It is the touch that constantly redefines and modifies the sound. Again, it is not a question of the sense of hearing, and there are no singular fixed senses. There are very specific encountering processes between the finger and the cello string, and between the lips and the blowing hole of the flute. There are thus plural continuities between hearing, touching, sensing, and hearing. In my opinion, it is through these plural relations and the endless variations in them that the local ecosonic interaction practices between acoustic and Ouija players are constantly defined and redefined.
Any quick comments? So, yeah, I wanted to, for that one, when you say there are very specific encountering processes, it's a discussion we had earlier, for example, about the difference between the encountering process that happens when you're playing in a romantic style compared to the encountering process that you have when you're playing in a Baroque style. And
so you're talking about sort of
on
the stance that you take or the relationship you have with the instrument, the physical...
Yes, exactly. The relationship that you have with the instrument and
the
stance...
The position of the hand or whatever. That kind
and
of thing.
The relationship you have to the resonance.
Yeah.
And the resonance in the room. So, it's not to say that the specific encountering processes are to do with the physicality of the instrument only.
There's also the meaning of the music or the genre of the music. Or the
exactly.
Music.
And that they can... Thus, you can adopt different organisations of your own physicality in relation to the instrument. Mm-hmm.
True. That's very true in this context as well.
Mm. 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 And I feel that that's a really important feature that's quite difficult to think about, because it isn't as if the complex isn't... You can sort of pretty much only experience it in one way at one time. But you can then deliberately set out and reconfigure your kind of body and listening and then experience the configuration in a different way, but not simultaneously, because it's not
about... And there's no kind of oeuvre, if you like, for this instrument, for the Ouija as it stands at the moment. So there aren't those stylistic...
Exactly.
...relations.
But also
I think,
there is less... The parameters are reduced in terms of the relationship with of your gesture and your stance with it. You don't have... They're not as... I don't think they're quite as refined and direct. Are they? I don't think so.
Yeah, how could they?
I think that there's...
No, quite. Well, I mean, I think the idea of training or non-training, or the idea of it being sort of open to access.
Or do you mean this mastering of non-mastering?
Well, yeah, this is behind this, isn't there? There's a question about experience with the instrument.
Mm.
But also, I think there is actually less specificity in the relationship between your the precise or the micro sort of things of your gesture in an instrument such as the nai flute, the brock flute or the cello, as there is with the shadows. There's your parameters of control are less.
I don't know, actually. I mean, all I can comment on is my relationship to the night is completely different in this context, in this ensemble, than it is to any other context that I play in. Mainly because I deliberately avoid certain... I mean, you talk about this a bit later, that there are traditions associated with particular instruments. And I suppose maybe I don't need to, but I found myself trying to be deliberately avoidant of... I don't play my Karm Taksim style stuff. I don't, you know, there's a certain way of improvising and a certain way of connecting, you know, the pitch points and whatever, which I don't do at all, really. I mean, occasionally, but not much. And I guess it must be, it's the same with the cello. You're not playing proper cello, really, are you, ever? Occasionally, you might sort of touch into something that sounds a bit like a romantic.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a good...
there are certain exclusions. There's that non-idiomatic thing, which is also here, which I mean we don't need to get into too much. But I've noticed that we don't play certain things. We don't very rarely do we play, you know, diatonically.
Well, this is also why I suddenly thought I wanted to have like a couple of unison theme tunes.
Right. But then maybe that's more about them negotiating what is the. That's a much wider question, isn't it, about the ensemble, I suppose, rather than. More compositional or something, or something.
Well, it's something, but it's a lot, yeah.
Idiomatic, generic, yeah.
But that seems to be an area that's very important. But how to discuss it? The idea of your kind of, as it were, ethnically informed Middle Eastern kind of references and the extent to which you've adopted and belong to them. And the idea of the sort of escape from or not the escape, but I mean, how, you know, in what sense could you
I wouldn't specify it as ethnic, because I think that, you know, the cello is just as ethnic as the nai is. I mean, in the sense that we all,
they're just as culturally bound or culturally bound.
That weight of history.
Yeah.
But except that, you know, that there is that question then of the Ouija and whether that's an ethnic instrument.
Right.
Well, which is, but what is happening now? What I think does happen inevitably is that because it is relating to the sounds that are coming from these other instruments, you're bringing those meanings or whatever into the Ouija. To a certain extent, aren't you? Because those are the sounds you're shaping and
But it's also, I mean, I feel that you as a kind of visual artist and somebody who's that there are all sorts of ways of thinking about your experience that you have and that you bring into it in ways that if we were talking about traditional instruments, we might not consider that experience as something that you're really bringing into it, because we think, you know, or you yourself are saying, I don't have previous, but you've got all sorts of experience are.
But then even the same thing happens with any instrumentalist. There are multiple sort of machinations that are kind of feeding into both your instrument specific histories that doesn't operate in isolation. You know, they're all feeding in.
May I ask as a short footnote and kind of very quick kind of, because I'm very interested in the sound producing these micro practices, that if you say that you are not playing nay in a way, in this particular context, in a way that you played in another context, so where in this sound producing this encountering of your lips and the nay, how does it happen, this difference?
It's kind of, I think, as Thomas was saying, it's not, it's in the instrument, but it's not, well, yeah, okay, the captain.
Because I'm not referring to style or just this kind of melody, and like you said, the patterns of it.
There are certain types of embouchure things that you would that I would never ever do. So recently I played at a workshop with, you know, with some Lebanese players and playing, you know, we were listening to all these recordings made in the early 1900s of very, very old players who, you know, and they were, you know, reciting Taksim in a particular way,
mm-hmm.
and we were trying to be quite stylistically accurate and trying to play in an old style, and it was, I mean, the mode of playing was completely different.
Yeah. But in how do you
embouchure
make the choices?
Phrasing, tuning, even, you know, the way that you play the third, whether you lift it, whether you flatten it, whether you flatten it on the way up or the way down, where it sits in the maqam itself, and where you're going to, if you're moving from, you know, Ras to Sabah or Hijaz, or where, you know, there's all that, there's all these other.
So what is it that informs those, like those kind of things in you when you're in the Ouija context?
Yes.
I don't
what
think
is
I,
it that's informing that? Because you're
I can't
saying,
name it actually. I don't know. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, it perhaps it's not one thing which is doing that, but it's different.
But are you more aware then of, just out of interest, the context that you're talking about, where you you know, you are using these particular embouchures or whatever?
Yeah.
Are you more aware then of what's informing those decisions, and is because of the tradition or the
I mean, in the other context, I'm much more aware of it because I think it's what you're saying about Baroque or Romantic. There's a standard almost, so there are reference points against which one can sort of establish what one is actually doing in a very clear way. So one knows that I don't know, if you're going to ornament a particular note and you're playing in this particular piece, well, there are ways of doing it, and there are ways that would not be perhaps proper, and so that, you know, you've got a template. Whereas in this context,
but what would happen then if somebody like me, who's never even picked up a nigh, and I tried to start using it and doing it, there would be a difference between, even though you're not being informed by those the things, we would. It would be different.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Because you are informed in some way, even if it's not.
That's true.
Because even I'm really angry I wasn't recording. You know, there was that time when you were just standing with Tina, saying, getting her to stand in the right position. There was very, very explicit things you were saying to her to orientate her, and that wasn't to do with, even before she started producing sounds. So obviously those things are at work.
But I think that's true of any instrument, isn't it? If you're trained in nutrition and you have a particular relationship, then you know, that's all part of the.
Yes,
the
it's
word.
All part
the
of
word
it.
I'm
looking
for.
It's a mastering of the instrument. But
no, it's a teaching line. What's it called? Anyway, it's a word.
Yeah, yeah. Lineage.
Yeah, no,
yes.
there's a particular word for. It's not praxis, it's...
But what I'm saying, that those are just in still operation when you're playing in the ecosonic. You're not suddenly stripped of those.
No, that's true. No, absolutely. But that's just as true of any instrument.
I agree, absolutely. But you did say as if somehow it was different.
It's different in the sense that, you know, when one is... it's not so much... It's more about how one is negotiating the unfolding time, because... You know, if you're, as a cellist, if you're playing, you know, you're free to improvise what you like and see what comes back from the cello. But you know that when you go, you're not going to get coming back from you from the Ouija, because that just doesn't, it isn't what happens.
No,
that's just not what, you know. I don't know if, and so for me,
but that's quite interesting. That it's just like it's just not what happens, but.
But it's
it
not
could
some,
happen.
It
so
could,
there's obviously
but no,
reasons why
it
doesn't.
It couldn't happen because the Ouija isn't capable of.
So you mean the Ouija itself? Sorry, I thought you meant no.
So in that situation, if Thomas was to play a cello line, and made by association, there might be a violin line that goes, or a similar, you know, counterpoint line that goes with it. The Ouija couldn't generate it. And similarly, if I'm playing a particular line, the Baroque flute doesn't go there. Or
so again, so what in operation there are certain. Ideas about the technical limitation or the certain physical material determinations of the instrument of the setup involved is inflecting what you're doing.
Yeah, there's a reading, but I think that's true again for all of us.
Oh no, I agree. I think it is agree.
There's just a reading, like the whole discussion about ecosonic.
Yeah.
Should there be a strict ecosonic approach to, say, the relationship between the two flutes, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
And we tried that a bit, and then we didn't do that, and we did other things, and you know.
In theory be possible to, if one wished to have responses which were framed by the rules of, you know, generative harmony, you know, that it could listen to a melody, retranscribe it and then do exactly
and
what
generate
you,
and
exactly what you're talking about, you know, it could, you know, that sort of thing is, you know, has been
done.
It's not a the notion that it's impossible. We don't do that.
No, I'm not locating a criticism in the instrument.
No, I
it's more about
so it,
the as an ensemble. You know, there
it
are,
is
there,
about
there,
what
the,
informs the way that
but it's a,
the
it,
repertoire of sounds that we or
we
whatever
use,
that
we
use.
Do,
yeah, something does inform that. However, kind of
when you come onto in your
very interesting. Yes, when you start
to
talk about
that. Okay, who's doing the next? Who is it next?
Who is it next? Who read last?
I did.
You did.
Oh, right, okay.
So it's...
either of us.
So constantly, the Ouija players constantly defined and redefined the electroacoustic process.
But it was... Yeah.
It's bad boy in class. What page are we on?
The electroacoustic processes used at the time of the seminar session in the sound examples were 1. Delays of 12 and 4 seconds. 2. Analysis / resynthesis using sine tones. And 3, pre-recorded sound files, location recordings and recordings of previous performances. All of these 3 processes could be understood as an honour threshold activity in a manner that Victor Turner describes as liminal. He considers the liminality as a sociocultural term connected to processes that are betwixt and between the normal day-to-day cultural and social states and processes of getting and spending, preserving law and order and registering structural status. Ouija players could touch the acoustic instruments through using delay, sound synthesis and pre-recorded files, which all shape the structural organisation of sounds, particularly on the timbral and spatial levels. At the same time, acoustic players could touch Ouija through playing their own instruments. At this particular interaction setting, the electroacoustic processes form a liminal socio-material spatiality where constantly transforming relations between players, instruments, sounds and sonic meanings are under a joint exploration. Nice, I like that. through this complex, in quotations, public reflexivity of sound, acoustic players adjusting their playing into or for microphone, and Ouija players controlling of sound diffusion practices, delay and sound synthesis, as well as remote embodiments, locate recordings in brackets, the interactional meaning-making processes of the Ecosonic Ensemble are based on common investigation of different liminal relations.
It's a very articulate sort of description of the process involved, isn't it?
I like it. I like that section very much. I don't know what complex reflexivity, public reflexivity quite is. Maybe I should read the footnotes.
I had
a quick
footnotes,
look.
It's
number 18,
I mean,
and I did think it was interesting, but I couldn't quite grasp it. It was something about Victor Turner again.
The publicity, I mean the
idea of public reflexivity, something that's enacted in a public.
It's the way that it's being bounced back between us.
Together,
that's all. It's quite simple.
Performances which are public. I mean, in that.
Why is it a reflexivity rather than, say, a public ritual, which isn't, I wouldn't necessarily say, reflexive?
Well, it's more it's a bouncing back
bouncing,
and forward.
Bouncing,
yeah.
I would say that ritual have kind of.
I'm with them there. Yeah, fair enough. Any other thoughts on that section?
I have an idea. Let's put the recording on also at the food place, at the restaurant. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Of course.
We have 15 minutes.
Oh, 15 minutes.
So, speak now.
that's. It was. not having read the Victor Turner, but going for what I feel the sense is in this paragraph, my one kind of area of agitation is between, sort of in an area where not quite registering structural status inside the ecosonic situation. And I think that's a very big kind of question, because even in the discussion that we've had about, say, Seth's change of approach to playing the nigh in the situation, it reflects what I feel might be a structural issue, which is this idea of there being a kind of an enlightenment blank space that we can all share. So your culturally informed nay playing might not have strict relevance in this kind of shared area, and so you adjust it as if there's some place in which it will engage in a kind of further alignment or attunement, or anyway, that is a structure in itself. That is a kind of structural idea. Ideology.
Yeah. Could you say that I meant the structure here very literally, like the sound synthesis changes the structure of sound. So I didn't mean this kind of structuralist point of, you know, that.
Which is quote, it's in his quote, isn't it?
Yeah, so maybe we'd need to kind of elucidate that a little bit more.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because that is, no, I agree. I'm going to move this on.
Yes.
Somebody's reading something.
Next second. Air, and this is caches.
Caches.
Air caches nothing,
as
or does
cachet,
it?
As, or is it cache?
Caches, stores.
Stores.
Hides.
Cachet.
Hides.
So.
Cachet, I don't know what it is.
So it's from French.
Yeah,
oh,
but
I misunderstood that completely.
Yeah,
though.
Hides. It means hides. Hiding is the word.
Cachet.
The synonym. Yeah. Hiding.
The air that streams. No, it doesn't stream. It deploys, diffuses, seeps and oozes around the sonic space. The air is blown through two different tubes, a baroque flute and a nigh flute, with varying embouchure and breath control. But in my listening experience, these two air diffusions occasionally seem to intertwine. This intertwining forms a place of all presence and absence, in quotes, that travels between the embodiments of the transverse side-blown playing and the vertical end-blown playing. The play of the baroque flute aims the air column to the edge of the blowing hole, like blowing into a bottle, and the lips are outside of the flute, whereas with nigh flute, the embouchure is bilabial, which means that both upper and lower lips partially close the end of the instrument. These two different lips-flute relations form a particular air diffusion context that at some fleeting instant sounds bi-blown. It produces both a separate and a common sound in differently embodied micro-practices of controlling the air.
I was very interested to read that, but then I would be, because it's about the nose. I mean, I think it's very interesting. I found myself wondering, what would be the equivalent conversation in relation to the Ouija, or would it be necessary to have an equivalent conversation? It may not be.
I think that Tina's doing it by having the conversation about the Ouija in the section before, and here we have the conversation about these
about
and just by
kind of,
and getting into the,
absolutely, it's the beginning of forming concepts about the potential relationship between them. It's not a separate, but you can't talk about them simultaneously.
That's true. When you talk about some fleeting instance sounds bi-blown, you mean bi-blown in the sense of two instruments at the same time, two blown by two people. I didn't quite understand what the by blown.
I mean that two air columns,
which
are kind of interacting when they
are. Okay. Two different.
And it sounds that they are blown to same tube, which they are not.
Okay.
I really like. I mean, I'm fascinated by all this, even though I don't play the flute on the night. I mean, it's a
One of the things I think, just to expand that slightly, is that the sound of the ney has a lot. It's not just to do with the embodiment, the breathing in to the instrument. I mean, you know this anyway, probably, but it's also about the point of departure, the exit through the keyholes, and that's especially important with the ney because of the way that you modulate the pitch very finely, and even timbre using the finger positions. So it's not just about on the
floor.
But that's probably true also of... I mean, probably it's less true of the Western
No,
terms,
yeah, yeah, it's less true because you're not... Yeah.
It's that thing about intimacy and tactility. I think the ney, for me, the ney probably represents the other extreme because it's so concrete and so tactile and so un-electronic in any way or mediated in any way. It's so... It's literally... You know,
it's
the same... It's as
crude
as it can
be. Now I have... experience with shakuhachi, which is also when you have this very little tiny,
very sensitive to time.
Yeah,
so it's
sort
of the opposite of crude.
Yeah.
It's
crude at one level, but hugely complex at the other.
Yeah,
I mean it's the same.
Crude
in the sense of it doesn't have lots of fancy keywork and
But therefore, the smallest bit of your gesture is what has the control over it.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's more, it's a finer degree of
Yeah.
of gestural
yeah.
control. Whereas when a key or something else is kind of doing it, you don't have, your gesture doesn't have,
yeah.
That could be added, that perspective of the sensibility of touching and the how does it interact with the air, the streaming of the air.
It's almost an idea within that, it's almost an idea of proxy, which I'm sort of just coming to now, but there's something that, because if you have at one hand the bit of cane with a few holes shoved through it, and that very as representing an extreme of tactility at one end, and then at the other end, and then we've got keys that supervene, through instrumental history, and almost at the other end of that continuum is then the Ouija almost, where there's absolutely, the proxy has become completely virtual. I don't know. Maybe there's a way. I'm just thinking. Maybe there's a way that we could develop that.
Most certainly.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, continuum of some sort.
No, proxy is a good word, and it's also to do with the whole person standing in for someone else.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a very good point. I would like to extend that direction to... Yeah, that air part started to go a little fuzzy. Because I, of course, I like, kind of.
This is the next section, is it? Or the back on?
The next section.
Okay.
Should we have that?
The Lucerigere. Lucerigere refers to air as the element of fundamental mode of a permanent available there is. According to her, no other element is in this way space prior to all localization and a substratum, both immobile and mobile, permanent and flowing, where multiple temporal divisions remain forever possible. Therefore, she concludes that air caches nothing. This may or may not refer to air as such, as the free, transparent element around us, but it is not the air that is blown through a specific instrument. As soon as an air column encounters a wood or cane surface, it becomes a highly loaded product, a carrier of several diverse meanings. It suddenly caches a lot of things. It is not innocent or pure, but is immediately breathed in and out, blown in particular ways into specially made tubes. It is precisely at this moment that we could ask how the structures, histories and past, and perhaps silence significances of the instruments, are conveyed to us through the players. In other words, if we subscribe to the view that the development and use of tools is not an outcome of human evolution, but merely the cause of it, we should be interested in the complex processes through which these tools, the artifacts, instruments, are shaping our embodied meaning-making production. This leads to the next questions. How much and how consciously can Preston and Ayaz control the meanings that are cached in their air-flute relations? How are these relations generated in this particular spatial, social and embodied ecosonic improvisation environment? How could these issues be studied?
I mean, my first, just a quick response is that in this situation, Preston and Ayaz are standing as proxies for their respective traditions.
Mm.
And also, well, I mean, that notion of air as multiple temporal divisions remain forever possible and prior to all localization is similar to the notion of this democratic and infinitely available and colonizable sheet
that can be infinitely divided.
Infinitely divided. The processes that it can represent are infinite, you know, as in the studio, as in the software, as in the, you know, and as in the
yeah.
So there's that. And there are the localized practices of the acoustic instruments. And hence the kind of problematizing of roles that people adopt towards the instrument.
There was quite an interesting bit within the discussion, wasn't there, that tied into that?
The one in
yeah,
March.
Yeah, sorry, I'm pointing at it.
Yeah.
The interaction between the ney and the baroque flute.
So that's in there, so we can draw on.
Okay. It feeds in quite directly to that.
I had maybe this is an argument that I have with Burkitt, who you quote here, about. In other words, if we subscribe to the view that the development and use of tools is not an outcome of human evolution, but merely the cause of it, we should be interested in complex processes. I mean, I think that's true. It's just this word, use of the word merely.
Merely.
I didn't know if that was an ironic merely.
Is it my merely?
I think it is. Actually, it's not a quote, but you reference this reference to.
Because
again, I would just. This is where I became more kind of aware of perhaps a difference in use of language perspective, because I would be talking about this coevolution between culture and brain, if you like, and the way in which, you know, what it's not that one causes the other; it's that the two
feed in and dialectically
do this.
Yeah.
So this idea. So it's just a question. I mean, it's probably a pedantic point, but I. We want to reframe that.
I had a slight problem with that sentence as well. Well, that quote as well.
Because there's something about emergence, I think, and you know that if you like the tool is emerges from the environmental interaction of the subject and.
I would again say that's more of it's a reflexive kind of.
Sort of, yeah, and I think it lays back. It comes back into the conversation we were having earlier about the. The way that one explores the sound, for instance, the environment, what's in the Ouija, if you like, has to be perceptually explored.
Yeah.
It's a kind of
it's
a relationship
constant
between
feedback
perception
between,
and action.
Yeah.
I guess I read those as kind of being linked in some way, or potentially being linked.
Well, that thing that you're saying about exploring the environment, which has a teleological aspect to it, that's you don't know what the environment is, and that you will explore it, and then
see what
further on, which is kind of different from an emergence idea, which is kind of co-creation between, and possibly is different from the other thing, say with the Ouija, which is that the explorations are within a territory that you've constructed already.
But this, but the resulting sound work is itself emergent. It is, as I would say, it is emergent because, and it emerges from the exploration. You don't know quite exactly what's going to happen at any moment. It's only through that interplay of whatever it is that you're doing and the sound that emerges, in quite a literal sense, this sounding at that particular moment. And that's where the music is coming from, in that sense. The musicking is emergent from that perceptual exploration, I would say, which in turn is a result of this kind of co-evolutionary process. We have this ability to be able to do so because of our co-adapted.
Well, this is what I sort of feel as if that's, if we were having two massive themes, you know, that there might be a third, I mean, I'm sure there are thirds, but one would be the kind of.
We don't have enough big themes, do we?
No, we don't have big. But one,
yeah.
one well, sort
or
of like.
We should write a book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's try to find a publisher.
But one of them is this, if we're talking, the word evolution,
oh,
and how one describes the things inside. I'm no expert on evolution, but no, definitely the word emergence, and people who are interested in evolutionary musicology,
yeah,
and
yeah,
in evolutionary kind of computing systems, that sort of thing. There's this kind of, I suppose, that a desire and a feeling and a intellectual curiosity about emergence, that and the quality of spontaneity.
Well, that relates right back to what you were saying right at the very beginning in the lost conversation, though, because you were talking about
lost tapes.
Because you were saying
the Garden of Eden,
the complexity of the programming, this thing about liminality.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, certain decisions
the
are
kind of agony.
Yeah, but it creates this electronic soup. A bit like the kind of primordial evolutionary soup, which creates the context from which the next emergent level can then
well,
happen,
I feel,
which is then giving rise to the music, almost. There's a kind of analogy there.
Well, it's a strong intellectual point to which I must give you full credit, but at the same time I feel that...
But...
yeah, no, I mean, I was...
By the way, I don't want to be boring, but...
Time to go.
Yeah, quite. Shall we?
God. I have to finish this sentence, though.
Or
the idea. Anyway, that's the issues of construction, of the decisions inside this microstructures of the what you sort of refer to as the programming soup, are actually, for me, incredibly painful, conscious decisions that we have to work out in discussion with each other. They're sort of not somehow decisions that can be allowed. They don't seem to just happen by themselves. Anyway, but that's one side. But it's emergence versus the kind of Western technological situation that we're in, and how that frames one's individuality. So the issues of kind of how much our culture, the Western culture, is a kind of continually expanding mushroom that kind of clouds everything, of which the Ouija could be one example, and instrumental kind of proxies roundabout. A way of trying to negotiate with that is one dominant huge idea, and another dominant huge idea is emergence. I mean, emergence doesn't get much
maybe
space.
It needs more airplay
moment.
Here, doesn't it? Maybe we need to expand.
Yeah.
I think I agree with that. I think there's a lot more to say
I'd
about
that.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah.
That was one of my things.
Yeah.
Not things, but one of my notes.
I think we can agree on that, can't we? Where are we with this right now? How far... And I'm aware that we have to kind of move on, but I'm also feeling like I don't want to leave this... unconcluded.
Some kind of conclusion and remarks Paul would like to.
Can I suggest that we quickly read to the end of this?
End, please.
And
please.
Throw in a few concluding comments.
Yeah.
And limit ourselves to say 5-10 minutes.
So we
finish. Just
yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because we've got some sort of point of
yeah.
closure of some sort. And I guess. Maybe it's time for you to read your own text.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Right.
What are you
from
thinking?
Where? From where?
From
page 5.
Yeah.
Becoming liminal.
At the beginning of the sound.
Shouldn't.
Wait, yeah.
It's at the beginning. Yeah, but can't we just move? Why don't we? Do we have to read it all? I mean, if I read this. What I'm
because then we can quickly throw in a few interjections and then we can finish the process of some sort.
At the beginning of the sound example, the ear is more like a contact surface with a tube, and they are short breaths towards the flute. The players and the flutes sound as separate, and the air forms a spatial distance between them. At 0029 starts a section that includes several intakes, a kind of discussion between the players of Balclute and me. Now the air is resonating inside the tubes. It has a particular sonic materiality of the interwoven wood and cane resonances. This bee-blown, bee-material, airy sound is, in my ears, ajar in several potential directions because of its fleshy generating of diverse liminal relations between the sound production practices of Paragonae flutes, between wood and cane resonances, between solid and breathy sounds, between side-blown, transverse and vertical end-blown blowing, between the different blowing pressures and between airstream radiations. At the section between 112 and 118, the air suddenly starts to vibrate as centered upon the lips of the Paragonae flute players. Players would be R there, I assume. There's an error. Which directs the materiality of the air to the specific embouchure construction. This sonic embouchure very literally questions the idea of the natural essence of bodies as innocent containers of musical transcendence. The lips pursed in a certain way, in a certain relation to a certain tube, shapes the air to an element of touch. Touch between the lips, touch to the flute, and touch to the co-players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that section. Going back earlier, I don't necessarily see that, because of its fleshy generating of diverse, I don't know that there necessarily need to be liminal relations, but that's a small point.
Mm-hmm.
I like this section.
And the ajar, you understood that, yeah.
The ajarness, I think we can make more of that. Actually.
Yeah, ajarness, yeah, we should extend that. I don't know though, what's the word of being slightly open. Ajar is being slightly open in every direction, yeah. But it is an English word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 It felt...
Yeah. Right, yeah, yeah.
With the just is the sound that you were talking about in the last paragraph. I mean, it'd be good to hear it. But is that where it's kind of, you know? I mean, it's kind of
very.
So it's actually the sound of the lips and the mouth more than the sound of the instrument.
It's kind of whistling. Yeah, it's the sound of the between the air between the lips. It's not the instrument sound. It's not this kind of. This, but it's the very nice of kind of but it's sound of person.
It would be nice to actually. I don't know if I got the sound with it.
I didn't.
I don't think I did. It'd be nice to hear. I'd like to be obviously hearing.
Yeah,
we
didn't get the sounds with the.
You didn't get it. I mean,
no.
They are the. Oh, didn't I?
Would that. When we
clicked
on it,
but you have you have the seminar session. It's in the
okay. So we just
page.
Have to find the relevant time. Yeah. No, the sound samples didn't come with the
embedded in the actual document.
Oh
so
right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
I clicked on the icon. Nothing
yeah,
happened. And
yeah.
So anyway, it doesn't matter.
I could email them next week.
It'll be good.
Not next week. Because
whenever you get a chance,
yeah,
but just
yeah.
So we can. I'd like to listen.
Yeah.
To
yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I've made MP3 files and short excerpts of.
Okay,
I mean, I'm
sticking to our time limit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are there important points to make there?
Only that that sentence, this sonic embouchure, very literally questions the idea that the natural essence of bodies is instant going to musical transcendence. I understood it when I first read it as referring to the whole paragraph before it.
Yes, I did.
Rather than that particular.
Turning on.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sound. That
can be moved up.
It's kind of one example of that.
Of
kind.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean the.
Two.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one.
Who's?
Shall I read quickly?
Shall I read myself?
You read it. You read quicker then, because it's yours. So.
It's a very shifting process. It's a very much in process all the time what I'm doing. On the subject.
Who's that quote from?
Me saying that in this seminar.
Okay.
Yeah. because you asked that, what
yeah.
am I doing, and
oh,
then
your
I said,
research,
yeah,
yes.
yeah, that's me, say.
So we need to close.
Because it's,
yeah.
I was thinking, I thought it could be, it could
no,
have been
no,
personal,
no,
settled,
me.
Yeah, that,
yeah.
yeah,
and then I start, on the subject of listening and touching, it's always unpleasant to listen to your own voice as recorded, especially if you are speaking in a foreign language at a public seminar session. I would argue that this too has something to do with touching. Your own recorded voice touches you in an unreal, deboned way, and at the same time you sense, recall the bone conducting the feeling of hearing your voice. At this particular seminar session, I did not touch any instrument myself, but when I participated in the discussion, I was touched by the sound of my own voice. There was therefore some kind of spectral tactile interaction between the players and me. Shall I continue?
Mm-hmm.
When I entered into ethnographic collaboration with the Ecosonic Ensemble at March 2009, I was in the midst of an epistemological and methodological crisis in my research. I had abandoned the idea of interviewing the musicians. Compared to the multidimensional setting of making music, the interviewers just started to feel too far from the actual embodied playing situations, and I had the impression that the knowledge generated in them was perhaps authored too much by the research, the questions asked, as the interpretations of the responses and the written outcome all seemed to foreground the research's highly selective choices. I entered the new field, the rehearsal sessions, meetings, seances of the Ecosonic Ensemble without any specific preliminary plans and with a very open mind. I thus found myself in the situation described at the beginning of this text. I was sitting, just for a short time, but still, in between the players. I was not at a distance with my notebook, not at all. The notebook was in my bag, and I flung into a bodily process in space and time, shall I?
Yeah, I like that section, it's good, nice description.
Yeah.
The forgotten notebook in my bag was a material evidence of my dropping of the academic armour, if there actually was one. The researcher in crisis is not the strongest agent of protecting expert position or jurisdiction at the direct implication of the ecosonic interaction. The immediate and unconstrained ways how the ecosonic players were interacting with each other and with me produced a space of intense immersion where the potentials and limits of my acting as a researcher participant in the field was under constant negotiation. Following the spontaneous idea of sitting between two players took me very literally to the liminal state of interaction. And then I would like to speak of that. If I'm sitting in between the players, should I play or be sonic, or should I say something as a kind of receiver?
There was also a moment at the Ouija board as well.
Yeah, yeah.
When
I was
very much
studying.
At that, where you were kind of talking about should you venture into playing, into, you know, do you implicate yourself in the sound or not?
Yeah, when I was standing there, then you came and you started to play the Ouija.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, shall I play it too? But then I didn't.
But then we're getting, with this section, I think we're getting into all this kind of in-group, out-group issues. And I think it's useful to have that, and also to have something about the reflexive, you know, within the text, talking about, you know, locating you as a researcher. I think that's important.
Exactly. It's a very nice way of highlighting important things.
Well, the process of you being here and acknowledging the impact that has. I mean, for instance, this.
Yeah.
Mm.
So there's a kind of other mode of production, if you like, that's coming to be.
Well, and that you bring in the notion of objectivity and a person representing objectivity, and then the role of objectivity inside.
Thomas, let's forget the word objectivity.
It's very, very modern.
No, but I'm not saying that it's actually objective,
yeah.
but the notion of objective, I mean, that's
yeah.
what you're referring
kind
to
of,
as,
yeah,
as,
no,
the,
yeah,
as the armour of the researcher.
In relation to you as a group.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But you're
highly as a flutist as a
researcher.
The outsider maybe is, or is that too obvious a terminology?
And then at this particular session, by the way, this session where you were not present, Friday, I thought that I was the only woman. And then when I started to wander around here, I asked you that, is it okay for you all if I walk around? You said, yeah. And then when I thought that, yeah, what kind of connotations it may or may not have afterwards, not at
well,
that
the
time.
Gender issues.
Yeah, you know, you men playing, you are supposed to be there and play, and then I come in between you, sitting you, observing you very closely, and kind of wandering around, controlling the space by moving, assuming that you are. Well, you did move to Ouija, kind of made a response immediately.
Mm.
But yeah, afterwards, I think that would be one very relevant issue too to explore a little.
Mm. That absolutely is one of the things inside the totalizing space, whether it's constructed as a kind of male gender, or whether this kind of
empty space, and this connected to the being a woman and researcher, and you being male and musicians in this particular context, and me then starting to wander, you know, around here and kind of penetrating to very, very closely to your acts of playing. I mean, just taking this position, this. Without any formal negotiation, I mean, this was very spontaneous. I never planned this beforehand. Yeah, that's one point. And I would like to hear that. How did you find the situation?
It's funny you say that, because I hadn't really thought about the gender issues, but now that you mention it, I had some very specific gender-related responses to what you were doing, specifically because the only time I've been playing the Nai when I've encountered a spontaneous woman coming that close has always been in the context of a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is always a dancer, and there's always a kind of charged, there's a kind of, you know, frisson aspect to it, which is also part of the performance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a musician, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, the musician's playing and all that stuff, and I hadn't really registered that until you just sort of talked about it in that way. And then the other time I've encountered it has been in a very different context. It's been in a more of a, you know, art happening kind of, you know, again, but not on this instrument. So for me, it was as a saxophone player doing a lot of noise, improv, whatever, and you know, a general sense of total chaos going on, and then having similar types of, you know, moments where suddenly, you know, you're playing something and someone decides to take away the microphone stand and do something, you know what I mean? I don't know what it's like for other people.
I think it's I'd have to put myself back to that moment. I think it's a really good thing to reflect about, but you know, also interesting that it's an area that you know that you want feedback about, as it were, you know, the reflections of us who were there. And is that is it to give you a kind of an okay to go ahead with discussing it in that way? Do you feel that you need permission to contextualize it in that way?
Yeah. Of course, permission.
I mean, it's obviously
it's kind of interaction.
I mean,
it's
initiating a discussion.
Course, yeah.
It's there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's there. How relevant it is, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's there.
I have no intention to go very in depth, but I just afterwards started to think about it. I mean, if writing off, dropping my own academic armor off. I just started to think that how much was I kind of generating on different kind of ammo that you perhaps had to, you know, start to shelter your own plane and kind of, you know, intimate space or something, because that was something that we never discussed beforehand, that now I'm going to be, and by the way, it was quite much between me and Thomas, and then I just popped into the group, and then hi, nice to meet you, and then taking this much, you know, space and this kind of spatial kind of I mean, how do you call it, but there at all,
obviously, so yeah, I can't comment on that specific thing, but it is, it's never felt, and I don't know whether it's just because of the way you've negotiated it generally, it's never felt like an you know, even the fact that, yes, you've done it via Thomas or whatever, it's always felt a very kind of organic, you know, this.
Yeah, good. That's something I really would like to...
I think if we are going to explore these ideas of gender, then we have to also ask questions about, you know, gender identities of instruments in particular, which is an obvious thing to talk about, but also there's only one female member of the group. So there's always...
Sorry, but Victor talks specifically about the genderisation of the liminal space.
So there's all sorts of, I mean, there's all sorts of interesting things to say about
that.
So there's a specific gender of us, but there's the genderings of the roles and the instruments themselves.
And about the instruments, I read an incredibly interesting article about of how deaf drums had been the instruments of women in Middle East, and they have this very nice article of Brighton University. What's the name?
I'd like to see that. It's very nice, again, I have to come back to that quickly. It's just that it also portrays the huge ambivalence about women in general, because yes, they're the instruments of women, but they're also like the hadrata, you know, the kind of female, and because they're instruments of women, they're also hugely suspect.
Because they
go up to do all these funny things that women do, you know, and so in the kind of religious context, there's, but also at the same time, it's a hugely sacred instrument.
It's also a
military instrument. So in different contexts, it's also a male instrument par excellence, especially the Persian duff with the chains and stuff. It's a military. It's an instrument of domination. It's an aggressive, you know, male thing. But I think that, I mean, there's lots of conversations there, isn't there? But I mean, the identity of this disembodiedness of the Ouija itself, a very interesting thing
that Ouija is the instrument, which now is the woman and man is playing together.
Mm.
The only instrument here now.
Mm.